Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give, and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
We've called ourselves Fruity Alexia, a hilarious pun. I'm sure everyone will agree. Or is it a pun? A play on words? Whatever the difference is, who cares?
It's both. It's a punny it's play both. On words.
Yeah. After the famous cask wine, Fruity Alexia, when was the last time you actually think you've had some Fruity Alexia wine?
I'm going to go out on a limb, and I actually think it was probably with you, but like, I reckon when I was 15 or 16.
Really?
Having said that, I'm sure you would have drunk it more recently than I because you went on to university, and I'm sure that's the sort of thing university students drink. I could be wrong.
Oh, look, you know, it's probably been put into a punch or something like that at some point. I can't actually remember having any in the house. I don't think I would have gone out to the shop and bought some fruity
a box of wine
on purpose. But, you know, it's always handy to have a box of wine handy. Just in case, you know, you're at uni, you know, a few people come along, you want to have something at the ready to, you know, because you don't want to sit there talking about uni all the time. You want to get them drunk and talk about something more interesting.
That sounds such a generous offer to offer people wine out of a box. If I went to somebody's house, even at university, although I didn't go, and somebody offered me wine out of a box, I mean, firstly, of course I'd take it. But secondly, I'd be furious and I'd rag on them later. Of course I'd drink it. I mean, whatever.
Yeah. I mean, I think there are some cask wines that it's just the winery has like not been able to sell some of their good wine, so they try and repackage it and put it into like the silver foil.
That's
so sometimes
very
you can get good stuff, but I don't think that's the case for Fruity Alexia. And actually, one of the best uses for those silver foil things is you can inflate them. Have you ever done that? Blow it up like a balloon and float it around in the ocean?
I've heard about inflating them like it's some kind of, you know, Australian folklore. I personally have never actually inflated one because I've never put my mouth on one of those little nozzle things because the idea of it makes me want to be sick thinking about how many thumbs have been touching that little flicky button.
Yeah.
I mean, how
well, sometimes it's only one, you know, if you've had a hard week. But the best thing about it, though, is once you inflate it, or the worst thing, I should say, is if it starts to deflate and you get a bit of a whiff of the air that comes out, it's this kind of mix of breath and off wine. And it's like super concentrated because it's been like mulling in there for, I don't know, weeks and weeks.
That's so and disgusting.
Yeah, it really just, you know, it wakes you up. You come, you know, if you're a bit drowsy, you really come back online as soon as you smell that disgusting
smell. I don't know why you're sleeping on an inflated wine cask bag, a goon bag, but anyway.
Well, you know, stops you from drowning.
Well, that's true, I suppose. I've never understood why they're called goon bags. What's that about?
Look, I actually don't, I don't know. Goon, this, I think.
Is it some really offensive thing?
No, actually, I think it comes from like a flagon, and this is like boring, like word history
here we
stuff.
Go.
But
this
it's
is
like
some intelligent person thing. Here we go, everybody, settle in.
Yeah, well, you know, like a flagon of wine.
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah,
yes.
I think it's like the last part of that. The goon. Like somehow over the years that evolved to be goon, and then I think
that makes sense. That does make sense.
So it's not it's not like a funny response, but I think it might be true. Yeah.
Okay, well, that's
I hope
boring.
It's not offensive.
So boring.
Yeah. I apologize if it is offensive to anyone, but
that
actually just No, the wine itself is probably the biggest offence.
Hmm. What do you think? Do you think with things like Fruity Alexia, it's actually like, like what is it? Is it Chardonnay? Is it, what is it? Is it Pinot Grigio? Is it, what is it?
Moselle? It must be the grape variety, right?
Do you think? I don't know. We should probably, we should get some Fruity Alexia after this. We should get some and try it.
Okay, maybe we'll do a tasting.
We should do a tasting of a minisode.
That's a great idea.
Oh my gosh.
Get the same brand. We'll go out after, get the same brand and do a little bit of a tasting. Make sure it's chilled, you know, or plop a few ice cubes in it.
Make all the difference. Okay, cool.
Yeah. And then afterwards we can strip the paint off our walls.
And then, of course, we can blow in up the bag and sleep on it.
Oh, yeah. Brilliant. So many uses. Yeah.
You've got all
it's
going to
be a long mini-sode.
Who needs pillow talk?
All right. Shall we get on with the episode?
Get on with the theme song. Let's go. Now, do you know why I didn't sing along? Do you know why I didn't sing along to
that? Why didn't you sing along this time?
Because you did me so dirty two episodes ago, or maybe three episodes ago, and I didn't know. And I had people contact me.
Yeah.
So, did okay. You? So, for those of you listening, so you would probably know that Alex does all like the production side of this. He does all like the little fancy buttons and the technical stuff. So, I just kind of. You know, I'm a gun for hire. He tells me what to say and when to say it, basically, and that's how we kind of roll. Anyway, so when the theme song plays, usually, he might talk or he'll sing along. So a few weeks ago, I started singing along to the song, and I was like, "This is really fun, you know, hooray! Yeah. Look, you know, yay, love the song."
And then
I
thought
nothing of it. And then what happened was you fucking kept that audio file, that bit of that recording, and you played it as the little. The little extra bonus bit at the end of the last or an episode a few episodes ago. And I didn't know, I didn't get that far. I turned off. So, and then you're like, oh, did you listen to the end of last episode? I'm like, no. And then I had all these people message me being like, is that you at the end of it? I'm like, oh my God. When I went back and listened to it, it's so embarrassing. But you know what? Fuck you. I'm embracing it. I actually think it was fine. I was great.
Well, that's why I put it there. I thought it was lovely.
Piss off. I mean, after that, nobody's ever going to believe that I could actually sing after that.
Well, we'll set them right at a later date. We'll prove them wrong.
Don't you reckon? That's true. Don't you reckon it's like when we go to karaoke? By the way, I don't know if we've mentioned this already, but both of us are obsessed with karaoke.
Oh, I love it.
And I always think like, you know, we do pretty average job at karaoke for people who can actually sing.
Yeah.
Don't you reckon? But that's the point of karaoke, right? It's so fun.
Yeah, if you take it too seriously, then it stops being fun.
I agree, totally. Yeah. And we have had many a night where we've been three sheets to the wind drinking and singing karaoke in like some weird Chinatown pool hall dive where, you know, singing Tammy Wynette and the KLF and Ace of Base and to a room full of very confused Chinese people.
Yeah.
And it's been great.
What's your go-to song?
I love Walking in Memphis by Cher.
I mean,
I like a lot of things, but I love something that is impossible for me to sing. Walking in Memphis is all right for me to sing. But I if I'm going to do karaoke, I want to do something really stupid and hard like Fighter by Christina Aguilera that I'm never going to be able to sing.
Yeah.
You know, because it's just so fun to like – be trashy and really just screech notes and I don't know. I just think it's kind of fun.
Yeah. I've got this friend that he always does Anaconda. So it's so funny to watch.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
Does he dance?
Yeah. He does the whole thing. Yeah.
That's
excellent.
Amazing. Yeah, okay. Well, I'm going to need a little video of this.
All right. I think there's probably one deep in my phone somewhere.
Amazing. I would love to do it. I'm probably, you know, I get up there and I kind of feel myself like it's a bit of a Celine Dion moment.
Yeah. The spotlight's on, you're wearing your sequined
100%
designer dress.
I'm in my sequined gown.
And then an Alexander comes along.
Yep. Exactly right.
Yeah.
I love it so much. And then I'm, you know, very quickly thrust back into reality with, you know, everybody kind of staring at me in disbelief.
Speaking of which, we should introduce ourselves. So I'm Alexander and I'm Alex.
No, I'm Alexander and you're Alex.
Oh, yeah. I was just reading the script. They're supposed to be on separate lines, I think.
I'm Alexander.
And I'm Alex. There we go.
That's great.
Yeah, we could be on radio, right?
We so could. Well, at least one of us could be.
Yeah. On a scale of 1 to 10, how busy are you at the moment in your week?
Oh, is this – okay. This is a commentary on my schedule, which is unfair, but that's fine. I am so, so busy. I am working a lot.
Yeah.
A lot. Like, I'm working a couple of different jobs and, you know, one's full-time, one's definitely part-time because I run my own business. And then I'm hosting events and doing a whole bunch of different stuff. So I'm really busy at the moment. But that's okay. I don't mind. I'm not complaining about being busy because, you know.
Yeah. And aren't you glad for the relief provided by Fruity Elixir?
I'm glad for the relief provided by Fruity Elixir, and I hope our listeners are too.
I guess it's probably not a leading question, but, you know, out of the work you're doing in the hosting and Fruity Elixir, what would be your favourite bit of the week?
Fruity Elixir. It sounds like the right answer.
Correct.
No, it is. Do you know, I genuinely look forward to it because it's not that I don't love all the other work I do. I do love all the other work I do, very much actually, but it is so nice to have, you know, time to, I think you talked about it when you know, a few episodes ago when you were like, oh, I've got all these degrees in journalism and all this other stuff. And it's, you know, mining a topic, one topic or something. You talked about that. And,
yeah. Yeah. Just mining one topic.
It's
yeah.
quite fun just to talk about something super innocent and, you know, campy and silly and relaxing and fun. And I presume just by people's feedback that other people are enjoying it too. So I kind of, it's quite nice really.
Yeah. I'm glad you're getting feedback. I've had one person contact me, I think.
Oh, I've probably had maybe
other than family members.
Six, seven or eight people sort of thing.
Yeah. Oh, well, that's pretty good. Yeah. Well, if you do know me and you're listening, please send me some nice feedback. Make sure it's good, though. It has to be.
And it wasn't the one bit of feedback that you had about me anyway.
Yeah, yeah. It was someone supporting something you'd said about Danny Minogue.
Yeah.
Oh, well. We're here to talk about Pop Stars Australia season one. Shall we get on with it?
Let's get on with it.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Hey, it's Ryan Reynolds, and I'm here with Keith, co-star of my upcoming film, If, only in theaters May 17th. Do you want to tell people the big news? All right, I'll do it. Sign up now and you'll get unlimited for $15 a month and 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan on us.
MintMobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 equivalent to $15 per month. Unlimited over 40 gigabytes per month. Face lower speeds. Videos at 480p. Active Mint customers by 531.24 get 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan. Auto renews after 6 months. Offer ends May 31st, 2024. Separate Paramount Plus registration required. Terms and conditions apply if rated PG.
Gosh, so I think we're up to episode 10 already.
Yes,
is that correct?
Episode 10, we finally made it to double digits.
I know. How exciting.
It's so exciting. I'm so excited to be here with you on episode 10.
Well, so just so everyone at home knows what went on in episode 10, we've now seen the film clip of their debut single in the previous episode, but now it's time to test out Bardo in front of a live audience. They're ushered through a corporate foyer in a Sydney high-rise past the paparazzi to a performance venue where they're there to do a live debut of at least two of their hits. And while nerves are high, so is the energy, and it's great to see the hardworking performers reap some of the rewards at long last.
That's a very it's a very rehearsed, prepared, way prepared for you. But I mean, go you. That was great. Go you on that recap.
And I almost pronounced all the words correctly too.
almost, which is hilarious because you wrote it. So anyway, Alexia.
It's probably worth noting that we're watching this all off a YouTube channel that has kindly put up the whole series for us. And this particular episode is missing, I believe it says, the first 10 minutes in the comments. So actually what we've seen and what we're commenting on today is only partially episode 10. Nonetheless, it's the exciting bit, so never fear.
That's right. I mean, I have to admit, I didn't realize, I didn't actually read the comments, I have to confess. But whoever was the, you know, the amazing person that uploaded this to YouTube, thank you so much. I mean, I can tell that it's been recorded on a VHS tape, which just adds to the nostalgia of the whole thing.
It does, doesn't it? Yeah.
You can see like the squiggly, blurry lines that would come up when you sort of play pause things. I love it so much. And
it goes staticky sometimes as if the tape's stretched. And yeah, it's so really good. Cool. Yeah. So, I mean, there is a lot of nervous tension. They're sort of all getting ready and prepared to do their performance. And Sophie kind of makes a little comment, like it's all coming flooding back. You know, that bit where Anna said, I couldn't dance in the auditions. You're sort of thinking of that before you're about to go on and perform. So, I mean, it's nice to kind of see that nervous energy, but you can also feel a bit of like angst as well amongst them, I think.
Yeah, well, firstly, we didn't actually hear Anna say in an earlier audition that she couldn't dance. I don't remember that being said at all. So that was surprising. But yeah, I suppose there is a lot of nervous angst before you go into a performance. There, I think that's pretty natural. I think big performers today even still get nervous, you know, before they walk on stage. I think that's really healthy.
Yeah, I think so too.
And remember, these girls were nobodies a hot second ago.
I mean, it's true.
Some of them have done as a rocker Stedford.
Yeah, that's right. And I think probably with all the build up, like I can't think of a performance that would have been built up quite as much as this for a while in Australia, you know.
No, I can't either. I mean, maybe, you know, 20 years before, some kind of John Farnham appearance on Countdown might have been as big, but
this was
just about the biggest thing that had happened in the modern music industry in Australia, I think, in a long time.
Yeah, and Molly Meldrum was nowhere to be seen, so
he wasn't anywhere to be seen. Very interesting.
And they're all sort of getting dressed and stuff. And one thing I couldn't work out was Sally doesn't seem to have washed her hair for a few days while the rest of all been done up.
Oh, look, they had her hair. Whoever did her hair, look, they sort of matted it up a bit. It looks like they rubbed cakes of soap in it to kind of make it a bit dirty and grubby looking. They did it to Tiffany too. It could have just been mousse or something, but I didn't love it. It was not a good look.
I don't remember. Was this a fashion at the time?
It was a fashion. It was kind of like a bit grungy, and it made it look a little bit dirty and greasy and sort of it clumped together a little bit. It was a little bit, dare I say it, Rastafarian. Are you allowed to say that?
Right. Yeah. So
it looked, to me, I feel like it was perhaps a little bit of, you know, that kind of indie kind of vibe, you know?
Gotcha. A bit messy like Kurt Cobain, Courtney Love sort of. Exactly. We just got out of bed to come to this concert.
Look. Exactly. But really some, you know, a fabulous gay guy called Kevin has spent 45 minutes finessing it, but yeah.
Yeah, gotcha. I did think that Sally looked a bit like Travis from Clueless. Do you remember him?
Oh, God, Clueless.
Played by Breckenmeyer. You know, he's the, like, skateboarder dude.
Exactly. Yeah. That's exactly what it kind of looks like, yeah.
Yeah, gotcha. Yeah, the greasy hair look.
Sure.
Anyway.
Yeah. Anyway, you can slide a Clueless reference in it. You will. Oh, my God.
I'm starting to panic that, you know, if, you know, anyone ever asks me about Clueless, I can't really remember it that well.
You're going to have to, we're going to have to rewatch it.
That's a great idea.
You know why we should rewatch it? Because firstly, Alicia Silverstone is just the best.
Yeah.
But also, Paul Rudd is in it when he was younger, and he's such a babe.
It's funny though because they're like stepsisters, stepbrother and sister, aren't they? Step siblings, yeah. So that's a bit strange, but I guess it's based on Emma or something like that. One of those old novels where, you know, back in Victorian England, you know, getting
you just married anybody.
Yeah, you know, close family relatives, it didn't really matter back in those
days. Kind of like Tasmania today. And I can say that because we're Tasmanian.
Exactly, yeah.
Does that ever annoy you? It annoys me when people make jokes about Tasmanians being inbred.
I know. I don't really know where it's come from. Like, I think what annoys me more than the joke is just the cliche. It's like, come up with your own joke, please, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. The thing is, oh, you're Tasmanian? Where's your scar? It's like, well, you've had your second head removed. It's so fucking stupid. People are so dumb. It's like, really? This is the best you've got. You're an absolute idiot.
It's that off the peg humor that I don't like, I think, you know, just something that makes you sound like you're funny.
Yeah. You're just a moron. And you think it's hilarious. I hate these people. Don't make those jokes to Tasmanians, people out there. We've heard them all before, and we just eye roll at you. Sometimes we do it, obviously. Sometimes we do it in our minds, but we just think you're a fucking idiot. So don't do it. I think that's the moral of this story, isn't it? And also, by the way, I know where the inbred thing comes from, and we can maybe talk about that in a minisode. It's the Black Bobs thing.
Oh, I don't even know what that is.
Oh, snap. We're going to talk about that in the next minisode.
Okay, all right. Make a note.
Mental note. Go. Done.
Yeah, all right. So they show a bit of, there's a bit of like red carpet action. They're sort of going into the inaugural performance, the album launch. And I think Marsha Hines is pretty much the only one we recognize. I don't know.
Speak for yourself.
Yeah. There was like someone like Abby Cornish who comes in that they're interviewing in a red dress.
No, Abby Cornish. As if it's Abby Cornish. Firstly, I don't even think Abby Cornish was doing anything then. It's not Abby Cornish.
She was still 14 and in high school.
I think she was still a child. I can't believe you don't even know who that was in the red dress with the red lips and the blonde hair. We talked about her a few episodes ago. I think we even dedicated a minisode to her.
Oh.
It is the doyen of Wheel of Fortune at the time. It is Sophie Faulkner.
Oh, right.
Australian. Does she look like Abby Cornish? Icon. She looks nothing like Abby Cornish.
Oh, shit. Okay.
But we love both Abby Cornish and Sophie Faulkner, but it's Sophie Faulkner, and she is an absolute treasure.
Yeah. And what's she doing there?
She's just been invited. I mean, it's a weird.
Were there some letters to turn around or something that needed to be done? Right.
It's a bit of a weird guest list.
Yeah. There's this guy who comes up and the reporter sort of goes, oh, hey, Jeremy, quick question. And I was like, Jeremy.
Yeah. I was like, who the fuck is that Jeremy guy?
Okay. You didn't know him either.
No. I tried to get a look at him and I was like, nah, don't know.
Yeah. And then some backflipping guy comes down and they say it's like the boys from some kale or something. And I just didn't even think kale was popular then. Like the smoothies didn't come along for at least 15 years.
Kale wasn't popular then. I don't think kale's popular now. Right. I think kale's it's all a bit of a fallacy really, kale, isn't it?
Yeah, it's got to stay.
You can read into that what you like. I think Kalen, you mean Kalen.
Oh, Kalen.
Kalen, they were brothers and they had a couple of songs before, I don't know, maybe around this time, or basically maybe, yeah, at the same time. And they were pretty cool. And they actually went on to become, Kalen changed their name to Disco Montego.
Oh, now I have heard of Disco Montego.
For Katie Underwood when she left the group later. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And then there's the one guy from Human Nature who shows up. I don't know where the others
are. Phil Burton. Mm.
Yeah. Didn't recognize him at all, but he pronounces that he's from Human Nature. So.
He's representing Human Nature, yeah.
And then I had to think, are they like the Ooh, I Want You, I Don't Know If I Need You guys? I had to scour my memory. I was like, no, that's
Savage Garden.
Yeah.
I had to think about that then. No, but that was such a good album. Both albums were great, Savage Gardens and Human Natures.
Yeah, but do we want to deal with Toby Allen here?
I've been waiting for this to come up. I've been dreading it for 20 episodes now.
All I heard from, I don't know, fucking when we hell. First started hanging out until, you know, we both moved into state was Toby Allen, Toby Allen, Toby Allen. Every day you mentioned him about 12 times. You had, I don't know, you've got a tattoo of him on your forehead. You've got posters on your wall.
Okay. Oh, God, this is so embarrassing. Sorry, Alex is not wrong. Firstly, let's just context this. Toby Allen is one of the four members of Human Nature, the band. And I had the world's biggest crush on him, like as in noted probably in the history books of time how much I was madly in love with him. And it was, everybody knew about it. And Alex is probably right. I probably did mention it several times a day.
Several times.
For like 10 years or 15 years. I don't know, 10 years or something.
Yeah.
I was madly, I thought he was the most beautiful thing I had ever, ever seen. And I just would do whatever I had to do to look at, if I could see him in a magazine or whatever. I thought he was such a babe. I loved him so much. So there you go.
Yeah. Look, I thought we just said, you know, if you were interviewing someone like, I don't know.
And can I just say, the other thing was at the time, like he was not like the, he was not the famous one in Human Nature. The famous, the most sort of famous notorious ones, I guess, were the two brothers. And then he was kind of the base that provided, you know, occasional bass bits, but he didn't really appear much in the video clips or whatever. And, you know, I used to love the little snippets that he'd get in the video clips. And he was such a babe. He went and did Cabaret, the musical, which I went and saw.
I was going to say, yeah, credit to Toby Allen because, you know, the first thing I saw basically when I moved to Sydney was him in Cabaret, the musical.
We went together, didn't we?
No, no, I went up on I was doing a bit of work experience up in Sydney. Oh, yeah. And, yeah, I got a free ticket through that and, I went along. And I just thought it was, like, the most amazing thing I'd ever seen because I'd never really seen – funnily enough, like, you get a lot of musicals in Hobart because there's a few, like, amateur musical societies, but you don't really get the big professional ones. So this was probably the first time I'd actually seen, like, a live – musical, and it was a really great one because, you know, sometimes you go to musicals and there's a lot of pre-records and stuff, but this was really like everything was on stage and bare and you know, everything was sort of done live, and it was really exciting. Yeah, such a great
feeling. I 100% agree with you. I remember I went to Sydney to see it, and I also saw it in Melbourne, and it was the Sydney cast was the Sally Bowles was Tina Arena. The Melbourne Sally Bowles was Lisa McCune from Blue Heelers.
Yeah.
But when I saw it in Sydney, Tina Arena was sick. So I think she didn't do much of the performances. I think another understudy did. But I agree with you. Like, I'd seen some big musicals in Melbourne before this, but seeing this Cabaret was the first time I'd sort of gone to one as an adult. Like, I'd voluntarily bought tickets myself.
And,
so if I didn't go with you, I don't know who I went with. Must have been my cousin or something. And I thought it was the most fabulous thing I'd seen on stage. I just thought it was so cool and so colourful and so interesting and just fabulous. And, of course, Toby Allen was in it, so I was madly head over heels in love with it.
Yeah.
And then when I saw it in Melbourne, I was there early just waiting and I was in the bar.
Yeah.
And do you know about this?
No.
Oh, you don't know about
this? Oh, you've probably told me at the time.
You would know about this. And he walked in before the show.
Oh, my God. And what did you do?
Deadly serious. Who was the person I was with? Somebody was like, you're not going to believe this, but Toby Allen is standing next to you at the bar. And I was like, don't be stupid. That's not even a funny thing to say to me. That's just being mean. You know, that's just really being stupid, like whatever. Yeah. And they're like, no, really, he's next to you. I was like, ugh. So I just sort of rolled my eyes, turned around. No shit. There he is right there next to me, shoulder to shoulder.
Right.
I was like,
I can only imagine.
So then I was like, hi. And my friend was like, can I take a picture of you guys? And he was like, very kindly said yes. Had a photo with him. And he still had like his, you know, sort of smudge mascara on. I don't know if it was from the show before, or like earlier in the matinee, or if it was like the night before or whatever. You know, and he very kindly just sort of, he grabbed his coffee and turned around and had a photo with me. And that was very nice. And oh my God, I nearly died. Went outside. went outside into China, the corner of Chinatown, and seriously had to like sit down on the bottom of one of those like big sort of, you know, arches that form the entrance to Chinatown and sit on the base of it and just be
Melbourne,
like, oh my God. I mean, I fully was legitimately, you know, hyperventilating as if it was Michael Jackson or something. I thought,
surprised you weren't taken to the hospital.
I'm surprised I wasn't. I've got the photo somewhere. I don't know where it is. I'll try and find it. But it was such a funny thing, and I don't think I ever quite got over it. And that was it then. That was as close as I ever got. And you know, now I think he's come out as gay and he's got kids and I think he's married. I don't know if I've made all that up, but I think he's sort of living his best life. But at the time, I think it was all very clandestine and undercover.
All right. Well, how exciting. Meet your heroes after all. They say don't meet your heroes, but there you go. There's a nice.
Yeah, he was very nice. Yeah. I mean, look, what was he going to do? He wasn't going to be an arsehole. Yeah. He just got a coffee and I was madly obsessed with him. I often think when I look at the photo, actually, I don't know where it is, but when I look at the photo, it's such a cringe moment for me.
Oh, no, really?
Yeah, I think for anyone who's ever held a candle to a star for whatever reason and whatever sort of level of stardom this person's at, I think meeting them is feels like the most momentous thing that you'll ever achieve in your life in that moment. And when I look back at it, I just think, oh, super cringe. Like, how embarrassing that I was so obsessed with this person who, you know, didn't know I existed, of course, you know.
Yeah.
And they've gone living their life. And it's interesting, isn't it, with celebrities? I mean, just to digress, but it's interesting with celebrities how much they can mean to people and how much you can sort of, without really ever knowing anybody, they just mean something to you. It's a really curious thing.
It must be weird, like, because you feel like you know them so well and then you go up to them and it's like this imbalanced relationship where they have no idea who you are and you've been following every word they've ever said for the last 20 years or something.
Yeah,
that must be a strange thing. You know?
It must be. And, like, that's the thing, you know, I mean, I'm just generalizing, but, you know, they probably have dozens of people a day stop them and talk to them for photos or whatever, whoever it happens to be. But, you know, it's the first time you've ever seen or met this person. So it's the most exciting thing. They have no point of reference for who you are, except that they know that you know everything about them. And that's why you're asking for a photo.
Yeah.
And, you know everything about them and you're obsessed with them. And so you ask them for this photo. It's such a strange thing. And I don't know. I generally would try not to ask for a photo with a celebrity if ever I meet them because, I've met a few and I think they're all lovely. Generally they've been lovely. But I often think it's kind of weird, like, I don't know, taking a photo with a stranger, isn't it?
Yeah.
I don't know. You've met a lot of celebrities. You've worked with a lot of them. I don't know. I think it's just.
I have, yeah. I mean, you don't. One of the worst things in the world is, like, name dropping. But
it's one of the worst things in the world, but it's also one of the things people love the most. Like,
it's quite fun, isn't it?
It is so fun. People are like, oh, who have you met? And then you tell them, and then they're like, oh, they're such a name dropper. It's like, oh, fuck off. Get a life, you loser. Like, you asked. True. You wanted to know. We all want to know. You know?
One of the things I did when I sort of first got out of uni or even in the last year of uni, they make you go and do some work experience at some proper theatre shows. But I went to do the Priscilla, Queen of the Desert musical, the original version. and the fun thing about big musicals like that is, and I had no idea, but if a celebrity comes along, they always get like a backstage tour. And, I mean, a few people came through. One of the really exciting ones at the time was Tyra Banks came through. So, you know, she sort of wandered past and said hi.
The biggest. Well, I guess she was nice.
Well, you know, she didn't stop and chat.
Yeah, as far as hi as can be nice, yeah.
Yeah. The other one was Elton John who.
Whoa.
Yeah. He shook my hand and then we all got a photo with him at the end.
Was he nice? Well, I guess he was.
Yeah, well, he loved the show and he ended up, I think, partially funding it to go over to the UK and, you know, go to the West End and stuff.
Amazing.
So, yeah, he was having the time
of
his life.
Really cool.
Yeah, and actually it's funny because they sort of, we heard whispers that there was a big celebrity coming and they were like, you know, they don't want to draw any attention to themselves and, you know, just don't tell the press or anything like that if anyone, you know, contacts you. Or, I can't remember. It was really like they just want to slip in and out and not be noticed. And then, of course, the show is about to start. The house lights sort of dipped a little bit. And then there's, you know, just reports from the auditorium, but apparently like two security guards entered and stood either side of a door. And then in comes Elton John between them in like a big sequiny jacket. And of course, everyone just goes mental. You know?
Amazing. Yeah. That is really cool. That's so cool.
Yeah. And then there were lots, but the other one that I can think of is I used to, after the show, because, you know, you have to wear all black while you're backstage, I'd wait and get changed in one of the, you know, toilets that was sort of off the side of the stage. And someone was in there taking forever, like ages and ages, and I really wanted to get home. And eventually, you know, you hear the toilet flush, hear someone washing their hands, and the sliding door slides open, and there was Twiggy.
What?
Yeah, you know, the model Twiggy.
Actually Twiggy.
Yeah, it was actual Twiggy. Who, luckily, that's, I was a big Absolutely amazing. Fabulous fan, so I recognized her.
So you knew who she was, yeah.
Yeah.
That's so cool.
And it reminded me a bit, there's a bit in Priscilla, Queen of the Desert, where they're talking about the ABBA poo. Do you remember that?
Yeah. Where she gets an ABBA turd. Yeah, that bit.
Anyway, luckily there was nothing to collect from Twiggy.
That's hideous. That is so bad. Did you actually think that though in the moment?
I did, yeah.
Did you? You thought, oh,
yeah. I mean, you listen to the show like over and over and over, and then suddenly, you know, I use the toilet after a celebrity. So, yeah.
I hope. Speaking of toilet stories with celebrities, I have one of those for you.
Yeah.
I was in the Ivy in London, the restaurant, the Ivy, for dinner, and there was all this like commotion outside, lots of really bright flashes, and you know, the windows are kind of like. It was the evening, but the windows are kind of like, I don't know, yellowy kind of glass. So you can't really see out. Yeah, so you can't peek in.
Yeah.
And like you could see the lamp lights outside, but there was just all this crazy flashing and screaming and shouting, and in walked Gordon Ramsay and his wife.
Oh, right.
And I had never seen – this was early on in the Gordon Ramsay becoming globally famous period. So like 2005. I know he was famous, but he became
back when he was the Naked Chef.
Yeah, it was then. No, that was wasn't the Naked Chef Jamie Oliver.
Jamie Oliver, yeah.
No, when this guy was when he was like when he started big global TV stuff.
Yeah.
So he came in with his wife, and I was like, oh, you know, what who is that person? And I was with my sister, and she was like, that's Gordon Ramsay. And I was like, great, who is Gordon Ramsay? But everyone seemed to care who he was. And there was just even more and more and more screaming and shouting and flashbulbs outside. And the door opened and Victoria Beckham walked in.
Whoa.
Yeah, major whoa. And she walked over and she gave Gordon Ramsay and his wife some air kisses, and they were sort of chatting. And then a couple of seconds later, the doors opened again to more screams, and David Beckham walked in.
Right.
And
I can now see where the toilet thing's going, because if, you know, it was you and Victoria, I would have worried that you'd gone in the wrong door.
Wasn't Victoria.
Okay, yeah.
And they walked past to their table, and I was just like totally gobsmacked, and I just kind of smiled at her, and she just smiled and kind of nodded. And obviously I presume she must have to deal with that a lot. She was just the fact that she smiled and nodded was enough for me. Anyway, they sat a few tables away. Then... a bit later, we'd kind of calmed down and whatever, and I went to the loo, which is back out through the front foyer and down like some stairs into like a little like it's underground. It's quite a little skinny staircase and a little dark sort of, you know, toilet sort of thing. And anyway, so I was in there, I was peeing, and I was like, gee, the person in the cubicle next to me is taking ages. Like, I'm like, you know, when you're in the toilet and somebody's silent in a toilet cubicle, you're like, what the hell are they doing in there? It's a bit sus, right?
Yeah.
Anyway, I was like, whatever. Anyway, out I go. Standing there, washing my hands, looking in the mirror, hear the toilet flush. And you know when you just kind of, you know, if you're in a public bathroom or whatever, you just kind of look up at the mirror and you look back down or whatever.
Yeah.
Anyway, I looked up at the mirror, and David Beckham just walks out of the toilet next to me and stands next to me at the sink washing his hands. I can't even tell you. I think a little bit of me died right then and there. I was like, what is going on? And, you know, I had hair then, so I was like spiking up my hair, and he was spiking up his hair, and they had like proper towels in the Ivy bathroom. So I was drying my hands in the towel, and he's sort of standing there with his dripping hands and waiting for the towel. And I was like, oh my God, oh my God. So I just kind of like handed David Beckham the towel and just kind of like off I went. And I was thinking, oh my gosh, my mum's going to be so angry at me if I don't sort of say something to him. Like, what can I say? What can I say? Like, I mean, I can't exactly say, oh my God, David Beckham, I love you. His wife's upstairs, who I also love. Probably I love her more than I love him, to be honest. She's fabulous. Anyway, and you know, minutes before she'd smiled at me. So of course, in my mind, we were best friends. Anyway, I was like, okay, cool. Maybe I'll say something. Maybe I'll say something. So we're walking up the little spiral staircase sort of thing, and some old man comes down, and David Beckham is like one or two steps behind me. And this old man kind of grabs David Beckham's arm, and both of us kind of fell into the wall a little bit because of how the older guy grabbed him,
right.
But his body was near where I was. And he went, good luck in the World Cup, mate. And David Beckham was just like a bit like, thanks. Like,
right.
And I kind of got caught in this like squishy moment of it. And then we kind of just carried on back up the stairs, and that was it. And I just thought, that poor bastard, like, he must get harassed all the time. And when he was sort of like, thanks. Like, well, you know, he was very uncomfortable that he was grabbed on the way out of the toilet.
That's what I was kind of thinking when you were saying, you know, he was very quiet in the cubicle. You know, imagine if he wasn't, and then suddenly you sell the story to the, you know, the papers, you know. It's got to not be relaxing going to the toilet.
It would be so stressful. Yeah. It was so – well, I would just clarify, they don't have – They only have cubicles. They don't have urinals.
Urinals, right.
So yeah. Just to clarify, that you have to go into a cubicle in the Ivy. But anyway, so yeah, so then, of course, I went back upstairs, sat down at my table and was like, oh, my God, I just peed next to David Beckham. I don't think I'll ever survive this night. And the most exciting thing that's ever happened to me, we went to leave the restaurant, stepped out into the footpath. All the paparazzi, you know, all the lights, the doors swung open, the doorman opened the door, and all these lights went, you know, flashbulb, flashbulb, flashbulb came up. Oh,
yeah.
And then straight back down again.
At the time, you could have been mistaken for Leonardo DiCaprio, though. Oh,
that's very kind of you. And yeah. Maybe I could have been. You're quite right. Now, less so. But maybe. And it was pretty
now maybe
cool.
More Philip Seymour Hoffman. But
I was going to say maybe more Elmer Fudd.
Anyway, we should get back onto pop stars.
We should.
It's a great segue, too, because they're being paparazzis foyer.
Oh, it's a bit of a half-assed paparazzi thing, isn't it?
Yeah, it's
pretty
true.
Rough.
And you wonder how much of it is sort of, you know, for the TV cameras as well.
It's so for the TV cameras. It's so not. I mean, we don't have that many press photographers in Australia.
No.
There's like one and all the news. I mean, I don't know if people know this, but like, you know, those paparazzi things, it's like there's one person that's contracted out to the newspaper and they just put it all on the wire in an internal database and they just get shared across all the different newspapers. It's pretty ho-hum. But anyway, they have all of these photographers and the narrator goes, oh, prior to pop stars, the girls would have had to pay someone to have their photo taken. But now they want their photos are being taken for free. And it's the weirdest thing.
It's very sarcastic, isn't it?
It's so sarcastic. I don't know who wrote the narrator's script, but it's pretty shit, the whole series, really.
Yeah. And then they sort of focus a bit, like before Sophie gets to in front of the photographers, she split her dress right at the back. And they sort of dwell on this. And, you know, we've covered this a bit before in other episodes, like, you know, leave these young women some dignity, please, you know.
Yeah. Well, it's weird because, you know, there's a shot of Sophie's walking in and her dress is torn at the back or whatever, and you've got a shot of the tear. So you can see, like, I don't know, whatever it is. I don't know if it's skin or what it is, if it's skin or underpants or what it is. And then the next shot is, oh, I've torn my dress, but they've already shown the shot of the dress being torn. Like, why would they even show that? They don't need to show that. Like, this 19-year-old chick's dress is torn and she keeps repeating, oh, my ass crack, and they keep bleeping her. I don't know why they're bleeping ass, but anyway. I just thought it was really
a simpler time.
It was a simpler time. But I really don't know why they even showed that first clip of her not holding it together, because the rest of the clips you see of her holding her back together. It just seems like, why would they add it? I don't know. Yeah. It just was
just gratuitous, isn't it?
Yeah, lecherous and gross. Unnecessary. Yeah.
They do a bit of I like Sally sort of takes control and starts narrating to the camera as they do this sort of let's walk through backstage, like in, you know, in Spinal Tap where they get lost in the corridors.
You mean Breckenmeyer?
No, not Clueless this time. Going for a much earlier film reference. But it's nice. I think you can see almost for the first time in the whole series how excited everyone is. Like, you know, of course, when they find out they're in the band, they're excited. But as a group who's been working really hard on this thing, you know, to finally make it to the album launch and to finally get in front of a live audience, I think, which is really rewarding to have, you know, people actually cheering, you know. it's nice to actually see them enjoying themselves for the first time, I think.
Well, I suppose this kind of feels a little bit like it's the, you know, the rewards for the fruits of their labor. It's their first live sort of experience as literal pop stars rather than girls recording an album who are complete nobodies, because it's all been done in secret to this point. You know, there's been a few weeks of press and a few weeks of sort of, you know, the public knowing who they are. So it kind of feels like, I suspect, it's exciting, a combination of exciting, but this is the time where they're here to prove themselves. It's interesting because the narrator says at one point, you know, this is the opportunity for the girls to prove that they can sing as opposed to being, you know, hired for their looks or whatever, which is an interesting comment to make because they only auditioned with singing.
It's true, yeah.
It's such a weird comment to make. Like, this was a vocal competition initially, and then it's, you know, they talk in other episodes about, you know, like, oh, the girls have so much control over their style, blah, 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 blah. So why are you making it about their style? Isn't it about their voices? I don't know. It's weird.
Yeah. It is a funny one. And I think that the narrator is also just talking about how in the media at the time they were being labeled as manufactured as well. So, you know, I think that came into that as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, I think that's pretty much though what it was. I mean, I've actually, you know, forever kind of been like, well, they're not manufactured pop stars because they were talented singers in their own right. However, watching back this episode now, I've changed my opinion and think that actually they were manufactured pop stars and it was nothing about how talented they were at all.
Yeah.
They were talented, all five of them, no question. And they are probably still. However, this was less about how talented these five individual performers were.
Yeah.
And it was more about how much money could be made and how much, you know, street cred could the various creative people involved get from being involved. You know, there's Jason Coleman doing his thing again.
Well, can we start by talking about that? Because the live performance starts and I just thought the choreography was absolutely dreadful again. I mean, it's so restrictive. And like talking about the manufactured pop, it really just does make them look like they're robots.
It's not good. I agree. No. It's not great. And also, I don't know if they can dance or not, but it doesn't seem like they can. And it seems maybe it is just the dance moves, but it's pretty bad.
Yeah. And I was thinking about, you know, like the Beastie Boys who had a career of 30 years that only really finished because one of them passed away. And it's three guys who just basically came out and yelled on stage for their whole careers. But, you know, they're not there doing singing. Well, they do sometimes. But, you know, they're not doing complicated harmonies and stuff like that. They just come out and they have energy and they're excited and they're jumping around the stage the whole time. And they're really excellent to watch. And it just made me think, you know, that's how you sustain a career beyond, you know, two albums, is you just put all your energy into your live performances. So there's something, you know, something to grasp onto when you're standing there in the audience.
It's so interesting that you reference the Beastie Boys because I have no reference for them having a 30-year career. So there you go. Right. That says a lot. I thought they were like, you know, one and done in the 90s. But anyway.
Oh, no. They started in the early 80s and I guess they probably didn't have a hit for, you know, 5 years. But then they went up to like, you know, 2012 probably.
That is amazing. I had no idea. I'm going to have to go listen now.
Yeah. Or watch a YouTube video of like a live performance from the mid 90s or something and just watch how energetic they are, you know. And like for reference, because I was like, well, Beastie Boys isn't really, you know, similar to a pop band. So
tomato,
I went and watched. I went and watched like a Spice Girls live performance and I found one of them doing Stop at the Brit Awards. And like Stop has got that choreography that's, you know, it's so you can dance along at home during the chorus, which I love. But the rest of it is sort of like you can see they've got points that they have to hit, but they're allowed to be sort of their individual selves like with that framework. And it was much more interesting to watch than these like Bardo clips, I think, you know.
100%. I mean, that was my – before you said that, that's exactly what I think too. I watched it thinking, why are they even making them dance to these songs? Like, you know, it makes sense to give them some marks to hit at various intervals, you know, for the chorus or for certain moments that they want to kind of call out, you know, placements of the girls on the stage when they're singing solos and stuff like that. But otherwise, just let them actually be free and let them sing and actually, you know, be unrestricted, especially because this particular dance and choreography is really, really restrictive also.
Yeah.
So I don't know. It's very, very strange. I don't know. I agree with you entirely on that.
And that's the other thing, just to go back to Stop.
By the Spice
like
Girls.
Their feet are pretty much still and they're doing like all the choreography of that
upper body.
Sort of, yeah, upper body and with their arms. And so like your eyes are drawn up to like their face and they're singing and, you know, the focus isn't on their fancy footwork, you know.
What I thought these girls, my observation of this whole Jason Coleman choreography thing that we've been talking about last episode and this episode, it feels like it's choreography for backup dancers.
It does, doesn't it? Yeah.
To me. And it doesn't feel like lead star vocalist choreography. It feels like choreography for like, you know, six guys in sleeveless tank tops in the back.
Yeah.
Kind of thing.
Which funnily enough, you know, I think, you know, I'd watched a live Bardo recording of them at the State Theatre where I saw Cabaret, funnily enough. And that's literally what it is. Like there are the backup dancers and, you know, Jason Coleman's one of them in a tank top doing doing the choreography. But I'm sure we'll talk about that later episode.
We will.
Yeah. But, yeah, I was sort of trying to pick apart why Bardo sort of folded so quickly. And, you know, someone like Beyonce, who's had a pop career that, and maybe I can't remember if Destiny's Child was manufactured at the beginning, but she's gone on to like bigger and better things. And now she can go on and do things like Glastonbury, which, you know, has a history of like big raucous rock acts, and here's, you know, a pop singer sort of headlining at it, you know. And she just has such control over the audience. And it's because she's allowed to be herself and she's allowed to be free and, you know, she really has that chance to interact, whereas I think this restrictive choreography means that there's it puts a wall between you and the audience, I reckon.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah. Look, I think there are a number of reasons why they folded Bardo so early. And I think that's
well, I'm blaming it on Jason Coleman. I think I'm calling it. It's all his fault.
That's a conversation for another episode. I think it's a whole conversation. But, I mean, I know that you're not a great Jason Coleman fan, so I understand why in this episode particularly you're like, ah, here it is. Here's the moment. It's Jason Coleman's fault. But I think there are a few other things. We can talk about that later. But I agree with you. I understand. I think, you know, with things like, you know, Beyonce, she was managed by her mother, or she may still well be managed by her mother.
All
that's
right.
One thing. So I think that's a big part of it, you know. And I think also Beyonce has something that very few musical acts have.
It's true. As like a scientific comparison, she's definitely an outlier of like she's amazing, of course.
Yeah.
So it's hard to compare her talent to, you know.
She's an absolute outlier, 100 million percent. And it is a once in a generation. Lightning doesn't strike twice in the same place, you know, sort of situation, you know, and I often think about this, you know, who will we remember in 50, 60, 100 years' time? I don't know that we'll remember many people, but we will remember Beyonce. Beyonce is an icon, and she's an icon. She's alive. She's living. It's not like she's, you know, an icon of yesteryear. She's fabulous, and she just has – she's, you know, all about evolving – in her own way, at her own pace. And I think that's what makes her interesting. She seems like she's in absolute control of her trajectory, her vision, her creative output, which I think is probably the difference.
It's probably everything after Goldmember she was in control of, I reckon.
Yeah. Although I have to say I loved Goldmember.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, it is what it is, you know. Schmuck and a pancake. Anyway, now the songs that they do. What's the set list? Because you reckon we see two in the episode, but you reckon maybe they did a couple more.
Well, I thought the narrator said something about, you know, they've got 20 minutes to perform, and I thought, okay, so that's maybe four songs. Like if the average pop song is 3 minutes 40, what is that? 4-5 songs with a bit of an intro, a bit of a razz up, an encore. I don't know. 20 minutes is not super long. So in a rehearsal, we hear them singing a part of Got Me Where You Want Me. Or is that what it's called? I think that's what it's called. Let me just check my album.
Let's have a quick Google.
I can actually check the album because I've got it physically next to me. Yeah, Got Me Where You Want Me. So I think they sing Got Me Where You Want Me. We hear that in a dress rehearsal. And then in the actual show, we hear them sing Higher Than Heaven is what they open with. And then they sing Poison. So that's three songs. I can't imagine they only did three. They must have done something else. And I would have thought logically it would have been I Should Have Never Let You Go, which was going to be the second single.
Yeah.
And they'd spent all that money having the, Tommy Farragut come out from America and all that. So I presume it would have been that. But what I thought was really strange is they open the performance with Higher Than Heaven, which is like a gospel pop track.
Yeah.
It's such a weird opening.
It's like a wet blanket coming out on stage.
It is. I mean, it's a good song. I like the song. It's a cute song. And it's, you know, I think it's quite a fan favorite, but I think it's quite a strange song to open with. And to me, I might be wrong, the vocals sounded like it was lip-synced or mimed. It may have been a dress rehearsal that was pre-recorded, so they were sort of lip-syncing to a live recording, possibly.
Yeah.
But it didn't feel like it was live vocals, because when you hear Poison sung, which is the next song that they sing, you hear a different vocal track to what the single is.
Right.
So I don't know. I'm not sure if they sung live or not for the Higher Than Heaven.
God, that would be so disappointing.
I could be
we're not
totally
manufactured.
Wrong.
We're not manufactured, and then they come out and lip sync along to a track.
Oh, look, I'm happy to be corrected. But it felt, maybe I feel that it felt forced, because I think it was such a miss. It was such a wrong track to open with. You've got a room full of industry executives and media. I don't know. It just feels like it's a weird, wrong positioning.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Just back onto musicals quickly. There was one I worked on, and I won't give away who it was, but there's this really famous bit in it. And remember, I worked in Australia and the UK, so I don't, like anonymity. I'm not going to tell you who it was, but it's this big famous note that everyone's waiting for, and they did this trigger thing. So the guy or person who was singing it couldn't quite hit the big famous note, and so what would happen was a MIDI trigger would happen as soon as the mic registered that pitch. Recording would, so it would cut out his microphone, and a recording of him would kick in. Wow. And I just thought, you know, you're going along to see this amazing performance, and really, you may as well just be listening to the CD. Anyway, I don't love pre-recorded stuff. I think it, you know, you're paying to see a live performance. Why are you going and watching someone, you know, Milli Vanilliing it along?
I mean, I understand the need for you know, pre-records for things like New Year's Rockin' Eve and some of those big open air things where, you know, there's a lot going on and they're singing through, like, you know, weird pitchy speakers and stuff. I don't know. I totally get it when they're trying to dance and do all that kind of stuff. I don't like it, but I can kind of appreciate it. You know,
New Year's Rockin' Eve a free event though? Have you paid $500 a ticket?
I'm not sure. Well, look, I paid $500 for Madonna, and she was the shittest concert I've ever been to. She was 45 minutes late, and she lip-synced at least the first 45 minutes of it. It was such bullshit. I was so furious. I would have asked for a refund. I was so angry.
Yeah.
It was so bad.
It's so disappointing, I mean, so I hope they were singing live, but I'm sure, you know, I can't imagine there were points where they weren't being
I 100% agree with you. I can't imagine they were singing live the whole time. But anyway, look, it was a weird set list. We're not music industry executives, but I thought it was really fucking strange.
Yeah. You want to come out, you know, there's been so much build up. Come out with a bang, you know.
But see, when you actually check out the album, and we'll talk about this later on another episode, but the album is quite thin on bangers.
Right, okay.
There are a couple of ballads that are just big major hard passes for me.
Yeah, they're the Disco Montego ones, what you're saying?
Kaylin, you mean? Kaylin, who wrote them. Yeah, well, I mean, we can talk about the album a bit more later, but yeah, I think like they do sing Got Me Where You Want Me, and I think that probably would have been a better one to open with. I don't know. It wasn't great. Or Down. Yeah. I thought Down's a great song, and they probably could have opened with that. But
they don't have a wannabe where they're coming out like high energy sort of.
Well, this is the thing. This is exactly my point. Like, you know, this is setting the tone. This is setting the tone. Like, set the tone. Higher than Heaven, mistake. Poison is a follow-up. Okay, fine. It's being released the next day. I get it. They've got to do it. But I don't know. I feel like it was a huge miss generally.
Yeah. And just in general, like, this is where you were saying earlier, like, it's definitely the manufactured side of it is really coming to the top now, because it seems like everyone who's involved sort of has their own stake in, you know, getting this thing going.
Yeah, that's more what it feels like to me. In this episode, and it was, as I said, it was only 10 minutes of the actual episode, but it feels like everybody's really just interested in their own piece of the pie. Like, you know, Jason Coleman, seconds before they walk out on stage, Jason Coleman's like, remember this about the choreography, remember this, remember that, remember this. You've got Michael Napthalai doing the this, and you've got the wardrobe people and the makeup people and this.
Yeah.
It just kind of feels like everybody, this is an experiment to see if they can take five nobodies and turn them into stars.
Yeah.
Irrespective that the girls are actually talented and can sing, I think that's actually a lower priority for a lot of people here.
Yeah. I mean, Marsha, why was Marsha standing backstage? I think she just wanted to get her face on TV after.
That made no sense to me. Why was Marsha Hines backstage? It was the weirdest thing. She had nothing to do with the show at all, as far as we know. I mean, she appeared up in that, you know, town hall for like the Sydney audition back in like episode two for a hot second. I assume she's friends with somebody or something. That's why she's sort of graced them with her presence. But why is she backstage at their debut performance? It feels a bit strange.
Well, interestingly enough, her and Jason Coleman ended up being, you know, judges on reality TV shows later. So I think there was some kind of get my face on TV agenda
possibly
going on.
Well, yeah, that's very, very possible.
Yeah. And there's quite a nice bit where, like, Michael Napthalai has a bit of a tear in his eye right at the end. He confesses how nervous he was beforehand, and he looks so proud afterwards. And you know, I guess he's had the pressure on him.
Yeah. I was very surprised, and I thought, oh, wow, am I actually having, you know, an emotional reaction to Michael Naphthalite?
I know. I'm yeah, he's had such a character arc in this podcast, hasn't he, where we sort of started off, you know, not so favourably, and now I think I'm a bit of a Naphthalite fan.
He was enemy of the state, and now actually soft spot.
Although there's something I need to confirm with you, and it's to do with
Naphthalons.
Naphthalons, yeah.
Naphthalons.
It's to do with a coin. Have you heard this rumour?
A coin?
Yeah, and if you haven't, I'm just going to leave it as a bit of a
Have I heard history. Of a rumour about a coin?
Yeah, Michael Naphthalite and a coin.
No.
No? Well, okay, let's... I'm just going to leave that cryptic for now, a bit of a teaser.
This is not some weird, like, sex thing, is it?
No, no.
I don't know if this is the forum for that, but...
I mean, I could be misremembering it, so let's wait until I have the information in front of me. But he went on to be in government afterwards, I believe, and there was a bit of a scandal to do with a coin. So anyway.
Okay. I thought he was like a lawyer or something.
Yeah. It's someone called Michael Naphthalite who went on to work in George Brandis's arts, I guess the arts. Is it a cabinet? I don't know political terms very well.
Me neither. But
yeah. You know, when George Brandis.
If you're looking for political things, but yeah.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, they'll know, by the way, I'm talking about it, that I have no idea what I'm saying. Don't be fooled, everyone. I'm not Lee Sales. Yeah, so anyway, I'll look more into that, but I think there's a bit of a scandal that happened with Michael Naphthalite in his next iteration.
Okay, interesting. Well, I look forward to this.
Yeah, I hope I'm right. Otherwise, I'm going to have to edit all this out, and, you know, editing is a very onerous task.
It is. Don't you think it's strange also at this point, though, you know, Chris Moss is at the back and he's like, can I give you a hug? And he hugs Sophie. And he says to her as he's hugging her, hope your skirt doesn't fall down or something, or make sure your skirt doesn't fall down. It's not a great look, is it? Like,
it's not. I mean, I feel like the whole time he's been quite creepy. But actually, funnily enough, out of all the, like, manufacturing bits that we see, like, that sort of prove it's just a big business, I feel like, you know, in previous episodes, he was the one sort of going, you know, need to look after the interests of the performers, you know, the performers need to have control, you know, blah, blah,
blah. I agree. To me, Chris Moss is the one who seems like he has a clue what he's doing. He knows what he's doing. He knows his role in this whole thing. And he seems to have their interests as human people as opposed to five non-human people products. You know, I think he seems to have their best interests at heart, which I really like.
But having said that, stop talking about skirts falling down.
Exactly. Stop objectifying Sophie.
Now, something I've never perfected, like I was saying earlier, I used to work backstage, and it's how to talk to performers when they come off stage. Like, I've spent a lot of time as a stage manager, and quite often you're the first person the cast see as they come from, you know, the screaming audience. And, you know, I'm quite a low energy, quiet chap. So, you know, one thing they taught us at uni, like, if you want to switch on an instant rapport with someone really quickly, you match people's energy.
Right.
Yeah. Do you, like, you do some management-y type things and you've been a manager in the past, you know. Do you have any, like, specific techniques you employ when managing people? Like, did you ever read a How to Manage People manual, or is it all just au naturel?
I think most of it is, for me anyway, personally, au naturel.
Right,
I have read a few little bits and pieces, a few books and stuff. There's a stack of books next to me here on leadership. Mm. Mostly they just sit there unopened. But anyway.
Is that Sun Tzu, The Art of War? Or
No. It's like Brené Brown, Dare to Lead and that kind of thing.
Oh, right.
But I have always said to people, or and I have always myself, you know, pretty much what you just said, it's meet people where they're at. It's nothing I've learned at uni. As I said, I didn't go to uni, so I have no sort of point of reference for what you're talking about. But, you know, if, you know, communicating something to somebody or, you know, communicating with somebody is not about necessarily you telling them something. It's about wanting them to hear it and understand it. That's got to be the goal of the conversation, the communication, I think. You know, so I think I always try to talk to people as if, what do I want them to take out of it, as opposed to what have I got to say that's so important, if that makes sense. Like, just, you know, do I want to paint a picture here, or what kind of a picture do I want to paint, or, you know, what is the impetus for this conversation or this interaction, that kind of a thing. So I don't know, that's kind of what I've always done.
Yeah. I guess when I'm doing sort of management-y roles and I've got maybe, you know, an assistant or something like that, I always try and think there's no such thing as a bad assistant. Like if they're doing something wrong, it's because it's my fault and I haven't explained it to them properly, or I'm not letting them, you know, use their own skills to solve the problem or something like that. Like I try and always think, you know, it takes two to tango, and there are things that I can control, I guess.
Well, I think you don't know what you don't know until you know it. And then when you know it, you can do better, right?
Hmm.
And I think that's kind of how I approach most things in a work environment, or generally in any kind of conversation with somebody, I suppose.
Yeah.
But, you know, I think it's a whole thing of, you know, seeking to understand what people, what's happening with people. And, you know, when somebody's just come off stage, you know what's kind of happening to them. They've got a real adrenaline rush. They're experiencing some serious highs right now.
Yeah.
Or they really fucked up and they're experiencing some really bad lows.
Yeah.
That's also very possible.
Yeah, it happens a lot. But can you imagine coming off with that really high energy and there I am going, oh, hey, how'd you go? Was it, you know, when?
Well, I don't know, babe. I've spent 20 years doing that. I've spent 20 years matching your energy with this. People outside listening to this are just like, well, fair point, Alexander, fair point.
Yeah. I mean, in my defense, is it still Sunday morning? Just by about 20 minutes.
Yeah.
But, you know, this is, you know, it doesn't get that much more exciting for me, I'm afraid.
This is about as high octane as you get, isn't it?
Yeah, this is peak, yeah, unless we're at karaoke, of course.
I was so about to say, yeah. A couple of drinks
as soon as
karaoke,
the first few bars of Seal...
Yeah, yeah.
Kiss from a Rose,
oh,
come on.
Such a good one. Oh, my God.
Yeah, yeah.
Don't even. If we could, I would, but I know that we would get in trouble for royalties, but oh, I would so do it.
Yeah.
And also, well, I can never sing on this podcast again, as we said earlier, because you keep using it illegally against my will.
Well, don't worry about that, because I have plenty of little snippets of you singing from all our previous episodes. There's enough to last us, you know, about 50 episodes of Fruity Alexia.
Can't wait. Fruity Alexia. Ah, yeah!
Well, we're near the end.
We are so near the end.
There's that energy I was talking about. Bam, bam.
This was a hard one because we only got 10 minutes of footage to look at. And, you know, I was thinking, and I might be wrong, have you watched ahead at all, by the way?
I haven't, no. I'm at a point now where it's all new to me. And actually, okay. I don't know what else is left. They've launched the album. They've done their first live performance. You know,
I think from memory, and again, this is 20-year memory, I think we do see them recording. We see them going to do like live performances at like Westfield Parramatta and stuff. And I think we also see them, I think the last episode they're doing they're doing the video clip for I Should Have Never Let You Go, I think.
Okay.
But
what's
also
in that film clip again? Are they on a set?
I think it's animated. I think you only see them for a little second. I think you see them sort of in a little window or something for a second, the real girls. And then I think they become
the cartoons.
Like cartoons. I could be wrong, but I think that's what it is.
That's
and
right.
The other thing that I remember happening in the series, which may have been the 10 minutes that were cut out of this episode, were the girls had some argy-bargy. The band had some argy-bargy about their band name because they are called Bardo.
Yeah.
And I'm not sure if it was this episode or one of the others, but it's not in any of the footage we've seen on YouTube that's been uploaded. The brand, the girls, the women's fashion brand Bardo, which is now kind of, you know, around.
Yeah.
And
if you Google Bardo, the fashion brand comes up first at the moment.
So it was new then. Before Bardo was what it is now, where it was, you know, in every single shopping center and was very mass produced, it was a startup fashion brand in 1999.
Oh, right.
2000.
Was
and,
it?
Yes. And the girl or girls or people who started that brand basically were like, you can't use our name for this band. We have a brand called Bardo.
Ah.
And so they struck a deal and it was on the show. I remember this being on the show. So anybody else listening to this, DM us because I'm sure this happened. They struck a deal to dress the girls exclusively in Bardo merchandise.
Really?
And it was before it is what it is today. So we're not talking about Bardo. It didn't look the same as what it looks like now. It was a different kind of brand back then.
Yeah.
And so I wonder if the 10 minutes missing from this episode is that conversation.
Ah, right.
Because there's a point where they go to the Bardo.
Oh, you think
factory.
It's purposely missing?
I'm wondering if it's just like maybe omitted because, you know, Bardo, you know, probably would care about that.
Yeah.
I would imagine the Bardot brand would care about that now. They're obviously a big, big brand now. But yeah, so I remember the girls kind of going to the Bardot factory or something and kind of picking from racks all these different clothes. That was sort of the deal. You could use the name if we got to dress them.
Oh, right.
I believe.
I didn't realize that coincided. I mean, I'm sure you're 100% correct. I thought maybe the fashion brand was a few years later and all the negotiations happened.
Well, what happened after the brand kind of folded? Like the brand did not become what it's become now for many years after.
Right, yeah.
So what we know today where it's kind of like, in every shopping center and, you know, lots of, you know, three camisole tops for $15 or whatever. It wasn't like that then. I think it started out as a different kind of label, and over years it's kind of become and evolved like that.
Right.
So, yeah, that's my memory of it. So I suppose maybe that's still to come, or maybe it's been omitted to this point. I would have been omitted to this point, I suppose, because they've already chosen the name, hey?
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's why we're lucky to have you and your photographic memory
that's
of these
right.
things.
Yeah.
We don't need a YouTube video.
No, we don't.
We've got an Alexander.
So far, I've remembered a lot of crazy shit.
Yeah.
Belinda and a caramel highlights. Remember that? You'll never
You've
get over
You've got little
that.
Caramel highlights in your beard as well.
That's not caramel. That's like grays.
It's sort of gray, ginger, and brown, depending on which bit you look at.
It is. So bad.
Anyway, we have an Instagram, don't we?
We do. We have an Instagram. Send us a DM. Flick us a like.
Yeah. Flick Did you notice I wrote bad... it sensibly?
Yeah, flick is not a bad word.
Yeah, flick us a like. Yeah.
Flick us a like.
But, like, my commendations to you for just reading the script professionally.
Thank you.
No matter what was on it over the last few episodes. There might be some more surprises, but I thought the joke was wearing thin. So I've gone back to normal.
I'm nothing if not professional. So thank
exactly.
you. Yeah. Appreciate that.
And there is, of course, a link in our description to our Acast support page. But, you know, the easiest way to just support us is to like, subscribe. Subscribing is important. Helps our algorithm out, you know. And then we publish shows every Friday and minisodes on Tuesdays.
And tell your friends, like, if you are listening to us and you're like, actually, we think this is kind of fun, totally tell your friends.
Yeah.
Share the love. Share the Fruity Alexia love.
Yeah, because I haven't told any of my friends really yet, so, we need you to do it for them.
I haven't told all of my friends either, because we've been working on getting some, you know, getting the show happening and getting the rhythm and getting the cadence and the content and stuff. And, you know, I think we'll probably start pimping it out a little bit more.
Yeah, exactly.
Because the bit of
feedback we're at episode 10 now.
Well, yeah, we're at episode 10. The bit of feedback we are getting is people are actually enjoying it, and I think that's really great, because it's nice for people – even if they are people that we know, it's nice for people to be on the journey with us and kind of be on this ride. It's quite fun.
Yeah, it's true. And, you know, people don't need to tell, like, even if they're our friends, they don't need to write to us and say they enjoy it. And they've just been doing it out of the goodness of their hearts.
That's right. They have.
And actually, we were talking, you know, there was a mini-sode we put out where I was referencing The Girl Can't Help It. And we thought that, you know, once Popstars Australia Series 1 finishes, we might do a few, like, little bridging episodes where we break down some of our favourite classic movies.
Yeah,
maybe
I
Clueless. Maybe The Girl Can't Help It.
That sounds like a fun thing, especially, like, over Christmas where, you know, there's a bit more time where you can enjoy some of those things. And
It's
always good to have a chat. I'm excited about this.
Yeah, me too. Yeah. So more of that to come in the future, you know. Don't want to give away all
Look
our secrets
at
once.
Wetting people's whistle.
I know. Yeah. I've been, you know, reading some hints on how to get more subscribers.
Oh, have you? And you
no,
think
I
that's
haven't.
How?
Yeah. Isn't it?
I don't know. We'll find out, won't we, if we get more subscribers, I guess.
Exactly. Yeah. Well, fingers crossed. I'll keep an eye on the stats.
Please.
Yeah. Have you got anything exciting planned now that we're near the end of Fruity Alexia and you have the rest of your day free?
No, I've got Christmas presents to wrap up.
Christmas presents? Are you one of those people that starts decorating in, what is it now? It's September.
So firstly, my Christmas shopping is done. So yes, I am one of those people.
Oh,
and secondly, is my, do I decorate yet? No, but I do love Christmas. I'm Christmas obsessed and I probably will, because I used to work in retail for the longest time. So it's hard to enjoy Christmas.
You were the Santa, weren't you, for a while?
I was an elf.
Or an elf, okay.
I was an elf. I was an adorable elf, by the way.
Wait, okay.
You know, I just think, like, you know, Christmas is hard when you're in retail because you kind of loses its charm for you because it starts in, like, August or September. But I do like to put my Christmas tree up as early as I can, like very early December. you know, and kind of have it for a good 5 weeks. I really, because I like, I've got a big 7 foot tree and I like to go all out for the decorations. And this year I'm going to make it a Bardo themed one for just for you.
Oh, yeah. Oh, well, isn't that lovely?
Hopefully you'll be able to fly by then and you can come up for like a Christmas dinner and I'll make a roast and stuff.
Oh, that would be lovely.
It'll be a
I'm going to be back working in theatre hopefully by then if things are open, which means, you know, we work up until midnight on Christmas Eve and then we start up again, you know, midnight the second after Boxing Day finishes.
Well, I won't have a problem leaving my Christmas tree set up well into February or whenever your gig finishes and then you can come up. The longer I can keep my Christmas tree up, the happier I'll be. I love it. I love Christmas music. I love all that stuff. I love Christmas food. I love talking to people and sending people cards. You know, I keep sending you cards. I've sent you cards for 100 years. You probably just chuck them. Do you have them all?
Well, we Marie Kondo'd. I used to keep a lot of cards, but we Marie Kondo'd a couple of years ago. And, you know, I said thank you to all my Christmas cards and then they got recycled. So.
Oh, that's so sweet.
Anyway, I guess, yeah, we'll see everybody, if not by Christmas time, you know, in the next episode.
Next week.
Next
week.
See
you later.
Bye, everyone.
Bye. Can you feel it?
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.